welcome to the MUFG Global Markets Podcast with Ehsan Koman, Head of Emerging Markets Research, EMEA. It's Friday, 12th November 2021, and this week Ehsan is giving his initial take on the COP26 deliberations. The following podcast is intended for professional investors and eligible counterparties only, and not for retail clients. Any content should not be regarded as an offer to conduct investment business or an investment recommendation, but for information purposes only. Ehsan, as COP26 deliberations draw to a close, what have been the highlights during the conference?
Thanks, Una. So yes, the COP26 clock is ticking and the deadline is closing, which is officially marked for the end on the 12th of November. So let me just walk through some of the key takeaways for us. So first, and perhaps the most promising, has been the US and China releasing a joint Glasgow Declaration on Enhancing Climate Actions in the 2020s decade on the 10th of November. Now, our reading here is that the surprise move indicates the strong underlying desire to achieve a credible outcome at COP26. And the wording mentions actions this decade, that is in the 2020s, multiple times, alluding to the urgency of action before 2030. Now, areas for cooperation, although a little wide and vague, cover regulatory frameworks, methane, decarbonization, renewable energy, and illegal deforestation, all highlighting concrete actions in the 2020s. So very promising indeed. And we think this cooperation could inject fresh impetus, not only to the final text of COP26, but indeed in creating a genuine roadmap for the months and years ahead. Second, the Glasgow Financial Alliance for Net Zero claimed that over $130 trillion of private capital is committed to transforming the economy for net zero. Now, some have raised queries on the aggregation of this number, but regardless of the actual figure, policies have to be realigned with de-risking these strategies and better climate disclosures. And so in our view, there is a statement of intent rather than one of immediate change here. Third, the momentum on phasing out coal, one of the key goals of the UK's COP26 presidency, has taken two steps forward and really one step back. So over 40 economies have signed the Global Coal to Clean Power Statement. However, there were notable absences from places like China, India, and Australia. And not only was the text diluted in order to garner more participation, but some signatories only endorsed some of the four clauses. Now, the Asian Development Bank also launched an energy transmission mechanism to retire existing coal-fired plants in Southeast Asia early, while Canada officially announced its commitment to end thermal coal exports by 2020. But on net, Una, there is progress, but coal is not yet history. Fourth, more than 100 countries representing around 85% of the world's forests promised to stop deforestation by 2030. And key here, of course, is that trees can absorb CO2 emissions. And fifth, a scheme to cut 30% of current methane emissions by 2030 has been agreed by more than 100 countries. And given methane is one of the most potent greenhouse gases, this is a welcome step, although China, Russia, and India, which are the largest emitters, have not joined thus far. Sixth, there has been some declarations unveiled on vehicles, aviation, shipping, albeit with mixed effectiveness. And finally, more than 20 countries have pledged to stop funding fossil fuel projects, which applies to new direct public support for unabated fossil fuel energy projects, though the impact of this is undetermined by the absence of key countries. And so, as with other pledges, this is not binding. So all in, you know, some real progress, which, given the delicate nature of getting so many countries on the same page, must be commended. But of course, pledges do not equal to implementation, and markets will look for action going forward.
And where do you see the main stumbling blocks, Ehsan?
So, where we see the key challenges surround three core areas. First, the rules for a global carbon market. Second, the format for countries to report their emissions. And third, the level of climate-related financial assistance provided by developed to emerging markets, which remain unresolved. So let me just take each of these in turn briefly. So on the rules for a global carbon market, which on the COP is labeled Article 6 of the Paris Agreement, now countries have failed on multiple occasions to reach a deal, but there is an agreement should be reached that could significantly, of course, reduce the price tag on emission reductions. Now, much of the background work regarding frameworks has already been agreed, but critically, this means agreed way forward rather than agree exactly what it actually means. Now, the main benefit for countries to cooperate in decarbonization is more emission abatement for less cost. Indeed, global carbon trading could save up to $300 billion a year in emission reductions by 2030, according to the UN. And reinvesting these savings would reduce global emissions by a further 5 billion metric tons a year by 2030. Second, on the format of disclosure, so big picture here, Una, is the challenge, even before COP26, has been an issue of greenwashing by corporates eager to massage their environmental credentials and increase their appeal to ethical investors. Now, encouragingly, there has been some major developments in the disclosure of risks related to sustainability with the International Financial Reporting Standards. That's the IFRS Foundation officially announcing the formation of the Internationally Sustainable Standards Board. That's the ISSB, which will develop a global sustainability disclosure standard to complement its accounting standards. Finally, on climate-related financial assistance provided by developed to emerging markets. So let me make three interrelated brief remarks here. So first, on general finance action across and support, there is growing consensus on the need for agreed definition of climate finance, but opposing views on just how comprehensive this should be remains. And that's how encompassing and specific should wording be. Second, on the collective quantified goal, emerging markets are asking for this issue to be resolved by 2023 via a committee or ad hoc working group, but developed markets are opting for 2024 via workshops. And third and finally, on adaptation finance. Now, although difficult to split out, all countries agree this should be scaled up, but to what levels remain divisive, with emerging markets wanting double the amount.
And with the heads of state returning to Glasgow to conclude the talks, what can we expect from the final cover decision, Ehsan?
Yes, Una. So many ministers and heads of states have now returned to Glasgow as the discussion moved from the technical to the political. Now, the UK COP26 presidency published in the early hours of the 10th of November the draft overarching cover decision, which is now being scrutinised by national governments. Noting here, Una, that the cover decision is in fact a legally binding document in the context of the United Nations, but it's up to each country to ratify it into law or not, as the case may be. So the main aim is, in essence, to finalise the deal by 6 p.m. UK time on the 12th of November, though the odds are stacked against doing so, as only 4 out of the previous 25 COPs have finished on time. And so current elements in draft format include, first, on ambition. So that's asks in terms of countries to revise climate pledges next year, because current iterations are simply not strong enough. Second, on net zero, that's asks for plans and policies for longer term, i.e. by 2050 strategies need to be ironed out. Third, on coal, which mentions the phasing out of coal and subsidies for fossil fuels. Fourth, on finance, that's asking for more provisions from developed to emerging markets. And fifth and finally, on the urgency, with many references to the science to 1.5 degrees Celsius. So on net, the language is seen disquietingly by many as inadequate, as most clauses are gentle asks rather than divisive actions. Now, we would emphasize that any or all elements of these decisions could change significantly or even by entirely removed as discussions progress towards the final cover decision. And here the exact wording really matters. Now, under obligation, tend to want to weaken text using phrases such as may and could, whilst those requesting action tend to want to strengthen text using phrases such as will and shall. And finally, there is also the potential for everything to unravel as the final decisions have to be unilaterally agreed, i.e. in full consensus. On net, finally, Una, we are cautiously hopeful that the intransience would be avoided, but time is really running out, both for the negotiations and the 1.5 degrees Celsius target and post-COP26, whether policymakers can move from pledges to tackling the fine print in how the energy transition should collectively work will really ultimately determine if the journey will be orderly or not.
Well, thanks very much for sharing your insight, Ehsan. Have a lovely week and we'll speak to you next week.
Thanks, Luna. Talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to this MUFG Global Markets podcast. Rate, review and subscribe and reach out to your MUFG sales rep for more information. Come back next week for more insights from the Global Markets Research Team.